Welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at some topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I'm business and finance journalist Matt Packer, and in this podcast we'll be covering stories from the week of the 7th of May, including delivery giant DPD overhauls its workforce contract following a driver's death, late payments are having increasingly severe impacts upon SME owners' mental health, a New York entrepreneur has given her hourly workers the same benefits as salaried staff to combat inequality, a think tank has urged the government to give millennials £10,000 each, and an Australian finance firm has slashed its working day to just 5 hours. Joining me to analyse these developments is the Institute's Head of Research Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Matt.
All right, in our first story, delivery giant DPD has introduced an all-new workforce contract following the death of driver Don Lane earlier this year. Mr. Lane succumbed to diabetes after missing hospital appointments related to his condition, reportedly because he was afraid of being fined £150 for missing work under the firm's so-called breach policy. DPD has this week unveiled a new driver code under which staff will be paid a minimum of £8.75 per hour and will be able to choose between employed or self-employed working models. The infamous breach policy has also been scrapped. Now, my first reaction to this was not a moment too soon. What's your take?
I think this is the dark side of the 0 hours contracts.
Yes.
The news today that job vacancies have now equaled unemployed figures means that there is absolutely a war for talent. If people want drivers, they're going to have to treat them better and pay them more fairly. And even £8.75 an hour seems incredibly low for what those people are required to do and the antisocial hours that they work, etc. Okay, it's a response on a personal level to what happened to Don Lane. And it's outrageous that anybody should be under such pressure they're not able to attend hospital appointments. But at the same time, I think this is a business-driven argument on the part of DPD.
Mm-hmm.
They need drivers, and they're going to have to be more generous in what they offer them if they want to attract and retain them.
Yeah, let's hope so. Okay, in our second story, campaign group and business resource The Prompt Payments Directory has uncovered a sharp escalation in the impacts of late payments upon the mental health of SME owners. The organisation has compared its latest annual survey of 1,000 affected firms with last year's figures and found that the proportion of owners who have suffered sleep deprivation has doubled from 34% to 68%. Meanwhile, those who have experienced other stress symptoms such as depression or anxiety have jumped from 29% to 52%. Now, these are pretty shocking figures, aren't they?
Absolutely. And I think if you work in that sector, you know about late payment scandal and how slow some of the larger companies are to pay their smaller suppliers. And we all know how money worries are a worry on a personal and a domestic level.
Yes.
And if you're having to worry about being paid, whether you're going to cover your own mortgage, whether you're going to cover your own bills, you can see straight away how stressful this must be for these people.
Because you're looking almost at a permanent cliff edge, aren't you?
You are. And also, as we've said previously, small businesses flounder because they have cash flow problems. And this is exacerbating them. And what can you do if your biggest, most influential customer is not paying you?
It'll be interesting to see what kind of impact late payments are having on growth.
Well, of course, it's going to make anybody reluctant to invest in expansion plans. I mean, just as uncertainty in the housing market means people don't want to increase their mortgages and move. If you're worrying about cash flow in a small business, you're not going to be thinking, for example, well, post-Brexit, I think I'll export to America.
Okay, next up, US entrepreneur Jennifer Hyman, who owns designer clothing rental service Rents the Runway, has penned a New York Times opinion piece explaining why she has equalised the firm's benefits, giving hourly workers the exact same packages as salaried staff. As Hyman notes, she saw that staff in Rent the Runway's warehouse, stores and customer service team had to face major life events such as caring for a newborn baby, grieving after the loss of a loved one, or caring for an ill family member without the same level of support as her corporate staff. Hyman writes, I had inadvertently created classes of employees and by doing so had done my part to contribute to America's inequality problem. It's great that this kind of message is getting out there, isn't it?
It is, and this is an ethical position that Jennifer's taken. That recognition that what might appear flexible to you is actually quite miserable to other people and quite unfair. And I think the recent release here in the UK of the gender pay gap statistics, there's not much of a gender pay gap in very low paid work. Mm. It's almost as though we're equally discriminating by paying people low hourly rates, no benefits, and it's keeping them in that so-called poverty trap and coming out and saying, actually, if you work for us, you're entitled to the benefits because you're one of our employees. Whatever that contract looks like is a real step forward. And again, it's going back to the drivers. If you're short of good people, you cannot do anything other than treat them well if you want to retain them.
Yes, it all ties back to how flexible working arrangements have to be beneficial on both sides.
It's got to be a two-way benefit, and it's the employer recognising that they need you just as much as you need them.
All right, in our next story, think tank The Resolution Foundation has urged the government to give millennials £10,000 each by way of a citizen's inheritance. The foundation cites several work-related factors behind its thinking, such as that millennials in their 20s are more likely to be in insecure work and will miss out on big pay rises because they're 25% less likely to move jobs than Generation Xers were at the same age. Now, there seem to be many, many dimensions to this, such as whether other social groups will get ratty, but I guess the overarching question here is this a good idea?
It's a curious suggestion when you think how much student debt so many of these millennials have managed to accrue and how unequally they start repaying that and how many of them don't ever get into a position to be able to repay it because of the sorts of jobs that they go into. What I think is interesting here is we have this almost a caricature of a millennial flitting from job to job, but that really doesn't seem to be the case. It seems that they're not able to secure the sort of employment that has a career track. Similarly, with the other piece is this gig economy where people are being used as a flexible resource and how disadvantageous that is for the individuals concerned.
Yeah.
So all of these stories, the theme is about treating the people that work for you well if you want to keep them.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that other social groups would get ratty about this if this was to go ahead?
Personally, I don't think it's going to happen. Yes, there are always people that resent other people's good fortune. And then there are other people who'd say, great, because actually, as I said earlier, starting out on your career with that level of student debt, I don't think any of us would envy that.
Indeed. Okay, and finally, there was an intriguing piece in the Financial Times this week about an Australian firm of financial advisers that has slashed its working day to just 5 hours. The firm in question is the Hobart-based Collins SBA, and according to the article, its new operating model emerged from leader Jonathan Elliott's experience of going part-time to care for his wife after she was diagnosed with cancer. Elliott found that he was fitting the same amount of work into 5 hours as he normally did in 8, so introduced that template across the whole firm. The FT says that sick days have plunged, and some advisors have done record levels of new business. This strikes me as an interesting inversion of Parkinson's law, which holds that work will always stretch to fill the time available. This is kind of like the other way around, where it's contracting into a smaller space. What's your take on this?
Well, this resonates with research we did a couple of years ago looking at remote and distributed teams. You have to start describing the work that you want in terms of outputs, not in terms of the number of hours you need to be sitting at a desk. If we start thinking about our work as to what needs to be delivered, I can easily see where you could get an 8-hour, 7-hour day down to 5 hours. How sustainable this is, because it's great for him because he's the chief exec, he knows everybody, he has his relationships, he has his authority, he's able to work like that. If you're new to that organisation with everybody working on this strict 5-hour, I will deliver what I need to deliver, where do you form the social bonds? Where do you have some time to help a new recruit?
Yes.
All the other things that we go to work for are all taken out. Mm-hmm. So although people really do value the autonomy that flexible working gives them, and I think that's undoubtedly the case, I don't know how long you can cut out everything that's not about delivering outputs and still offer people that ability to enjoy the whole of work. And it will be really interesting to see how sustainable these results are.
Okay, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website, which can be found at www.institutelm.com. That's www.institutelm.com. Thank you very much indeed for your insights, Kate. I look forward to exploring a new set of stories with you next week.
Great, thanks, Matt. Nice to talk to you.